Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
Get ready to call in and ask your questions about your pets for Dr. Debbie or Joey Villani from the free Animal Radio app for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. Go to the phones in just a couple of seconds. Judy has booked an amazing show today. I'm real excited about this guest here.
Which one?
This one right here.
That one? Me
You're
too.
You're so organized. Oh my gosh.
How long have you ever owned a pet? And this is a question I'm asking everybody within the sound of my voice right now. Because for me, maybe 17 years old, I had a cat, which is a long time to have a pet.
Go I on. Had a dog till 18 years of age.
You had a dog till 18. So, almost 2 decades.
I've never had anything over 20 years.
Joey has a bird who's been with him for a long time.
30-something years.
That's a pretty long time to have a pet.
Yes.
What about you, Lori? How long have you had a pet?
A horse, 17 years.
Dr. Debbie, have you seen anyone at your office that's had a pet for a long time?
Oh, gosh. I've had some dogs to live even longer than my own family pet. I've had 21 and 23-year-old poodles. That were really in great health up until the very end. So that's for the dogs. And then I'd say the other animal that I see that's quite old, older than much of my staff, is a Amazon parrot that's 46 years of age.
Oh.
And so that one outranks everyone with rights in my clinic,
sure,
based on its age.
Hierarchy. So we're going to be talking to Gina Smith in just a few minutes. She's had her pet since she was, well, let's just put it this way, since the Kennedy administration.
Jeez.
And the pet's still alive and well and may outlive her.
Wow.
Anyone want to take a guess at what kind of animal? Dr. Debbie, I'm sure, knows.
I was going to say a bird.
A bird.
Yeah.
That's a good guess.
Yeah, I would say a bird or a tortoise.
Oh, there you go. You got it. Tortoise. She has a tortoise. She is 65 years old. Her tortoise is 56 years old.
Jeez.
She got this tortoise as a 10-year-old kid on her 10th birthday. And she's going to tell us today a little bit about what it's like to live with a pet for pretty
Forever.
Much your whole life. That would be great if our cats and dogs lived that long, wouldn't it?
Yes, it
I would enjoy that. Also on the show today, we're going to be talking about schnozzes, your snout, dog schnots, cat schnozzes. We're talking about the snout. We're talking about the nose. We know that dogs and cats can smell really, really well. But how well? Well, there's actually a guy who's done a little bit of research and a book on it. But is he in Norway? Are we calling him in Norway?
We are. Yes, we are.
Well, it's got to be late there.
I would think so. It's got to be in the late evening.
Yeah, so he's going to stay up and talk to us. Okay.
Hopefully he'll be there.
Okay.
Hopefully we won't wake him up.
We'll talk to Frank Rossell. He's written a book called Secrets of the Snout. And he'll tell us just exactly why that dog, whenever you go over and visit your friend, why that dog's always up in your business. You know? Because I've always wondered that. I consider myself a clean guy. I don't think anybody should be up there in my business. But apparently, today we're going to talk to Dr. Dawn Crandall. She is a diplomate of the American College of Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care. It's all about emergencies for her. And she's going to tell us what to do just in case your veterinarian's out of town when you need veterinary care. That's on the way here on Animal Radio. Are you ready to take some calls, Dr. Debbie?
Yeah, let's go to it.
Well, hi, Diane. How are you?
Well, I have two Persian cats. One's a white Persian with blue eyes, and the other one's a silver shadow pug face. And she was a Katrina cat. And she never, ever will go potty on her box, but she'll go potty next to her box, or she'll go potty by the door.
And do you have other pets then as well?
I just have the two cats. And they don't get along. They're both female. And if one's up by me, the other one doesn't come, and they won't eat in the dish at the same time. The Katrina cat will hiss at the other one. The other one will come and get me at any hour and make me come and watch her eat so that she can eat.
Okay. All righty. And so I have a couple questions, Diane. So you have two kitties. How long did you have the first kitty before the Katrina kitty came along?
Oh, a couple of years.
Okay. And so, and during that time, it's just been those two kitties then? No other cats have been in the home? Okay. All right. Well, you know, when we have kitties, just like I like to say about my college roommates, you know, some of them get along and some of them won't get along. Cats have personalities just like people. So we do have to respect that and to really have, realistic expectations. We're not going to make every cat like the other cat and want to tolerate them to the same level. Some cats, are great best buds with fellow cats in the home. Others just kind of coexist and don't really have an amicable relationship with each other, but not really an aggressive relationship. And then there's the other situations where we can have spats, we can have aggressive behaviors, we can have a lot of anxiety going on. And those are the ones that we really, you know, would address and, you know, look at what we can do to help you. So a couple things, you know, if we have a kitty that is, had a history of litter box issues, that can be a sign of stress, of the different things that kitties do. They often will hide, they'll
always
pant.
Been that way. And when I first got her, she got underneath the bed and she wouldn't come out.
So that's what I'm saying is this kitty's personality is very different and we're going to have to give her a lot of room. But the history of having litter box issues for a long period of time can be a hard thing to correct once that's been going on. So the things that I usually advise folks to look at are both the litter box environment and then the environmental stress. And then we actually also throw in veterinary health or animal health. So a kitty that is not using the litter box reliably, either for peeing or for pooping, should go see the veterinarian. I can't stress that enough to you, that there can be medical things that can cause a cat to initially go out of the box.
I've already done that. There was nothing.
Okay, so that's number one. The second thing is that we look at making her environment less stressful. And the presence of another cat is inherently stressful to a kitty like this, so we want to give her nice resources, and we want to make sure that we don't increase the competitive nature. So for kitties in a household, when we have cats, there's kind of a general term. We do one extra litter box more than the number of cats. So if we have two cats in a house, we would ideally like three different litter box locations. That decreases competitiveness for the litter box, and it can also just give us different locations so that we can have sometimes favorite boxes. Cats will choose to poo or pee in different boxes. But other resources that cats will compete with and that cause a kind of quiet stress for them will be things like food, water, hiding spots, and human affection. So this is where a lot of people don't really look at how their cats can be stressed. So cats, we know, like to get vertical height. This is how they feel safe. They can watch out over predators or, you know, other housemates where they're at in their environment, and they feel more secure knowing what's going on around them. So I like to give cats trees, window perches, and give them extra opportunities throughout the house to have those kind of places to get away. And then for food and water, we don't ask cats to share bowls. We don't want that to happen. You know, some cats, that'll be a fine arrangement, but we do not want cats that are stressed to try to compete and go to the same food bowl. So we should have multiple water and food bowls in other locations, and that should be away from where the litter location is. And that helps to decrease their competitiveness for resources. All of that stuff is part of it. But then we talk about the litter box. And that's a whole conversation that I could carry on for about 45 minutes. So I don't have time for that, Diane, but I will give you some of my points. So I did mention the number of litter box. The other thing is we look for a litter box that is about 1.5 times the length of the kitty's body. If you have a cover on the box, I'll say get rid of the cover. We'll switch the litter types. And then definitely sometimes we will actually just switch the location, because if we've had a bad history of using a litter box in one spot, logic would say, let's go move it somewhere else. Where is the kitty eliminating? So we move it those 2 feet to the side, or we move it in front of the door, the window, where the kitty's already having those urine or fecal accidents. And if that's where they choose it, we do that. And we can change different substrates in the litter box, the clumping litter, clay litter. Sometimes they'll even put carpet segments in the litter box if they're already eliminating on carpet. If they like it and they're using it, I'm just going to try to make them do it in the right spot. So there's definitely a lot that we can work with and try to do. Then I kind of pair that also with positive exposures. So, you know, your two kitties, to have them in the same room would be a great thing. And the way to do that is to feed them. nearby each other. We are not going to ask them to go face to face or nose to nose in the same bowl, but maybe separated through a door or through a area where they can just kind of hear each other. And that's where we're going to feed them, give them good, rich, nice canned food, let them enjoy it and have a positive association with the sight, smell, and the location of the other kitty around. And it's going to take time. And let's start with some of those numbers of those resources and see if that'll help you out.
Dr. Debbie, you said if there was a hood on the litter box, then you would tell them to take the hood off. Now, is that because you're just trying to switch it up or because you don't think that hoods on litter boxes are conducive to cats pottying in there?
Well, in this situation, there's two things I would think of. One is that sometimes the presence of a cover on a litter box, the cats will touch the cover, and it's kind of like being in an outhouse. You know, nobody wants their elbows to be touching an outhouse when you're out at the fair. So cats, it could be the same thing. They find it an aversive thing. The other thing would be is if we're worried about a territorial issue where there's another cat in the house, sometimes the fear of coming out of that enclosed space and getting attacked can be an issue for kitties. So not having that cover can sometimes help. Sometimes it's the opposite, where it actually gives them some visual security.
Interesting.
Well, this portion of Animal Radio is underwritten by Kensington Books. If you love stories about finding strength through the wisdom of dogs, look no further than A Reason for Hope by award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler. It's a beautifully uplifting story about a courthouse dog named Hope, who's trained to comfort victims throughout the legal process. A Reason for Hope is now available everywhere books are sold. And if you need more information, you can visit them over at kensingtonbooks.com. Thanks, Kensington, for underwriting Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hello, this is Jane Goodall on Animal Radio. And I'd just like everybody to realize that each day you live, you make some difference on the planet, and you can choose what kind of difference you're going to make. And hopefully every day you'll try to make the world a little bit better for people, for animals, and for the environment.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discreet sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets. And I'm thinking it's about vacation time for you, Dr. Debbie, isn't it?
I've been saying the same thing, but nobody's listening to me.
Well, what happens when you go on vacation? What happens to your patients?
Well, you know, I'm fortunate that I work in a practice that we have other doctors on site, so we don't have to close our doors. But in a small practice where there may be only one or two veterinarians, it could mean that there is nobody available when the lone veterinarian goes away on vacation. That could create a bind for people that don't have a vet in the nearby area for them.
So we're going to talk to Dr. Dawn Crandall in just a few minutes, and she's going to tell us what to do when your vet is out of town. And that's in about 15 minutes right here on Animal Radio. Lori, what are you working on?
Oh, gosh. You know how everybody's got an opinion on what needs to happen with the world of flying animals or
flying animals?
Service animals.
You mean like birds?
Animals flying in airplanes with humans. Oh. And are they legitimate service animals, et cetera? This has gotten to be such a heated issue that now the Federal Department of Transportation is soliciting everybody's comments. And we'll tell you how you can make your voice heard in that debate in just a few minutes when we come back with the news.
Well, hi, Patricia.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing great. Where are you calling from?
Iowa.
Iowa.
Yeah.
Do you have any pets?
I got three.
What kind of pets do you have?
I've got a 15-year-old poodle terrier. I've got a 10-year-old Yorkie terrier. And I got a 5-year-old miniature chihuahua.
Wow, you got a lot of pets.
I love them all.
It's a pretty full household, isn't it?
It's just me and my dogs.
Yeah. How long have they been with you?
I had peas 15 years. And Piper, I've had 10. And Minnie, I've had about 5.
Aw, that's wonderful. Are you having any issues with your babies at all?
Well, yeah. They get real antsy and very nervous and shaky in the car. And I'm going on vacation next month. And I get I'm going to take them with me. It's about a 6-hour drive.
Okay.
I was wondering if there's something I could give them or something that I could do to relax them on the drive.
Well, yeah, there certainly are. But there's a couple things that, you know, we look at when dogs are traveling. Now, does anyone ever get sick to their stomach? Do they ever vomit?
No.
Okay, so they're just excited. They're running around. They're panting. They're carrying on in that way. Okay. So a lot of what they've learned to do in the car is just what they're repeating. So we haven't given them any other opportunity to learn something different. So the best way to handle this is actually to have them relearn how we expect and we want them to travel in the car. And there's a couple ways we can do that, which is different than just purely sedating a dog to get them through a car trip, because that doesn't always give us the result we want, and we're really not helping the pet. We're not helping them cope and to learn with how to manage this in the future. So the best way I help dogs with travel anxiety is a couple things. One is I like to get them used to the car and make that a favorable place, but they also have to behave calmly in the car. So an example I will give you is my little terrier would do this, where he'd get in the car and he'd sit there and go, and he'd do that. So what I did is I ignored him. I looked the other way. And then when he was quiet for that 1 second to 2 seconds, I took a treat and I handed it to him. And I said, good boy. And he soon learned that when he was quiet and he didn't act up, that he got love and rewards from me, not getting attention for barking, running around the car and all that. So that takes some work, and you may need to work with each pet individually, rather than try to kind of corral three dogs doing this kind of training. The other thing would be is, that I'd also recommend other things to help them be calm in the car. Number one can be to give them some sense of comfort in confinement. And confinement is such a word that makes it sound so horrible, but it actually can be reassuring. So the example is, you know, kitties in cat carriers. Okay. They may go somewhere, see something that they don't like, but they can be very comforted by that kind of safe kind of haven that they have with that carrier.
Okay.
So same thing for dogs. We may use a dog carrier and use that kind of tethered down, or a pet crate while you're traveling.
Okay.
A seat belt. Pets can tolerate seat belts or seat belt seats, and that's a nice way to keep them so that they're not jumping and running around and further amping themselves up. And that kind of also goes with visual stimulation. So some animals, just looking out the window, seeing things running by, dogs, people along the way, it gets them more anxious.
Okay.
So that kind of fits with, you know, maybe keeping them in a kennel so that their visual area is confined, or even having some cars have those little blinds you can pull down on the windows.
Yeah.
That can help to decrease what they're seeing, and that can also kind of help to calm them.
Okay.
And then there's some other, you know, tools we can use. I do like natural pheromones and some of the calming supplements that contain L-theanine and the milk proteins. Those can work in a natural way, but, you know, it is important to use that along with training, because the training is the biggest thing. And I think you'll find that, especially if you have one of your crew, and this is how I find it works in these little guys, usually it's one dog that kind of sets everybody off. And that would be the dog that I would start with first and really work your training efforts on, and kind of getting to that calm spot and rewarding calm behavior. You can do it.
Okay.
And then definitely I'm going to just put the little blurb out there. If you're traveling with your pets, especially with the summer months, you want to have a collar, ID on, and make sure your pet is current on vaccinations and deworming heartworm preventative.
Oh, yeah. I keep them all up to date.
Great. Very good. Oh, well, I hope that helps you out, Patricia.
Thank you.
Safe travels, Patricia. Thank you for calling. Bye now.
Well, you lucky dog, don't forget you can get your fix of Animal Radio anytime you want with the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android. It's made possible by Fear-Free Happy Homes, helping your pets live their happiest, healthiest, fullest lives at home, at the vet, and everywhere in between. Visit them at fearfreehappyhomes.com. And thanks, Fear Free, for underwriting Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
I'm Lori Brooks. The Department of Transportation has announced it is asking for comment from you, everybody, all of us, from the public, in order to draft rules for dealing with animals flying with passengers on planes. Yes, they're finally getting to this. So the proposal asks for comments for about 45 days. And the questions that they're asking are whether to treat psychiatric service animals the same as other service animals, such as for the blind and deaf, how to distinguish emotional support animals from other service animals, whether to require ESAs to travel in containers or on a leash while they are in the plane, potentially limiting the types of animals qualifying as emotional support animals is something else they will consider, and potentially prohibiting airlines from requiring veterinary health forms or shot records for service animals. Now, because of all of this rulemaking is the official process that they call it, the department says it will focus enforcement on clear violations of current rules that could affect the largest number of passengers. So if you would like to make a public comment, you have to file it. It's all done officially. You go to the website regulations.gov. And because it's such a long internet address, and also because I've tried 85 different ways of searching for it, and I know the title of this document, it's going to be easier if we put it on our website, which Hal will do within the next 3 minutes.
I will do that. I'm doing it right now.
Okay, good. And, you've got it already, but it needs to be on there so that we have an easy link for people to put their comments. And it should be in the list of what's trending near the bottom of the page when you go to regulations.gov. But if it's not there, just come on back to animalradio.com and we'll have it for you here. I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
This portion of Animal Radio is underwritten by Fear Free. Fear Free takes the pet out of petrified and puts the treat into treatment. To learn more and find a certified fear-free veterinary professional near you, visit fearfreepets.com.
It's Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets, year-round, 24/7. And I'm very familiar with Murphy. Murphy of Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law.
When do you need your vet? Oh, when your vet's on vacation. That's when you need the vet the most. Or you're on vacation.
You're on vacation, yeah.
Joining us right now is Dr. Dawn Crandall. She's a diplomate of the American College of Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care and a fear-free practitioner. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
So what are the circumstances which we might not be able to contact a vet when we need one?
Gosh, in this age of more and more connectivity, fortunately it's getting less and less, but I would imagine if you're on a really remote camping trip, you might have a hard time, or if you're in an area where your cell phone coverage is poor or absent, you might have a hard time, you know, reaching out to a veterinarian and be totally on your own. Fortunately, most of the time these days, there's often a way to make a phone call at least to get some advice, which is helpful.
Well, sometimes my vet goes on vacation, she turns her phone off.
Right. Now, vets are obligated to provide you with 24-hour care. Obviously, they can't do that themselves many times, but they should forward you to another service that can offer you some care. And many veterinarians refer their clients to overnight care clinics or 24-hour practices when they themselves aren't available to help you. So it's certainly wise to scout out the area that you're going to be traveling to ahead of time and find out what veterinary clinics are in the area and what their hours are and what emergency clinics might be servicing them in the off hours, and have that contact information available so you're not trying to look it up if you're in a frantic hurry.
That's wise. I'm planning a vacation. We're going to go camping up the coast here at Big Sur. We're planning on taking the dog with us. I just realized I probably should have some kind of, I don't know, pet first aid kit.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So are you looking for some ideas on what to put in it?
Yeah, I have no idea. Would it be just like humans? You'd put Band-Aids in there? And
Similar. Bandage material might be a little bit different in that it's hard to just often slap a Band-Aid on a small cut on a dog. Uh-huh. And so they usually need a little bit more bandage material than you would use in a human. And so you would probably want to prepare yourself with an abundant amount of gauze squares and absorbent wrap and some of that self-cling tape and adhesive tape. The other thing that's often useful in a first aid kit are some medications. And again, it's totally worth a chat with your vet before you head off to consider what medications would be useful for your particular trip and for your particular pet, and if there's any other things going on with your pet that might alter what you would give them. But some things to think about would be over-the-counter antihistamines, maybe a starting dose of an antibiotic. There's a couple of generic antidiarrheal medications you might want to take, a topical eye antibiotic, a topical antibiotic ointment. Those kind of things are actually pretty useful on a trip, just to get you started until you can get in to see a veterinarian. Other things you might want to think about would be tick pullers or fine tweezers. They make little plastic gadgets to take ticks off pretty easily, and those are pretty helpful. A pair of plastic gloves or latex gloves so you don't have to touch it. If you're in porcupine country, you can get a small needle-nose pliers and take out. If your dog's got just a few, like two or three quills, you can sometimes take them out if the dog is of a calm temperament. If there's more than that, you should probably get a veterinarian to help you. A bottle of eye rinse is super helpful.
A bottle of what? What was
the
that?
Eye rinse, like just
eye rinse,
just a sterile
okay.
Eye rinse. And the eye rinse is helpful too if they encounter a skunk, because that's a pretty nasty chemical they can get in their eye. And then the other thing you might want to put in a first aid kit would be a muzzle for your dog, because dogs that are really badly hurt will sometimes redirect a bite to whoever touches them, and that's pretty normal behavior and not at all a comment on the friendliness of the dog. That's very normal, and pets or people should be aware of that and have a way to protect themselves if they need to.
If they are in pain, you know, you're afraid of them biting you, how do I know if it's an urgent situation or if it's a true emergency?
Right, yeah, that's always a hard call if you're trying to decide if you need to kill your camping trip and get out of there to see the veterinarian. If it's a true emergency, I guess there's some obvious things. You know, if there's clearly a limb fracture, I think that's something you really need to get in to see, obviously, right away. If your pet is not willing or able to get up and move around, that's usually a sign that things are pretty bad. Once in a while, we see pets that, you know, are running through the forest super fast, and they will actually... that's my little dog.
Oh, that's a little dog?
That's my little dog, yeah. Impale themselves on a stick. That's a true emergency. bigger dogs tend to get a problem called gastric dilation and volvulus, which can come up very fast and needs to be seen as soon as possible. And those dogs would have a non-productive retching and vomiting, and they are clearly, something bad has happened. They are clearly sick dogs. They have no energy. They just don't want to be, you know, often with you because they're so distressed. Their belly might be distended. Those guys are pretty sick. If there's significant bleeding or hemorrhage, that would be something you'd classify as a true emergency, I would think. And the other thing that owners could get proficient at doing, and it's really helpful, is to assess their pet's gum color. Have a look at it frequently when they're well, so you know what normal looks like. And when they're quite sick, in emergency sick, their gum color looks quite pale or gray, and that's usually a pretty bad sign that things need to get seen right away. You can also check their heart rate. And again, these are things that's useful to do when they're feeling well, so you have a sense of what your dog's normal resting heart rate is. And if it's significantly faster than that, that's usually a sign that things are not going well. And have a look at how they're breathing as well. If they have increased rate of breathing or clear increased effort, that's an emergency. And another thing you can check is the temperature of their peripheries, of their paws. And assuming it's not cold weather, if their limbs are cold, that's usually a sign their circulation is quite poor, and that truly is an emergency as well. So those are all sort of signs that, yeah, you better cut your trip short and get in to see somebody right away. Hmm.
Since the line between urgency and emergency is so delicate and thin, and sometimes you can't even see it,
yeah,
would you lean towards, if you just don't know, going to see the vet?
For sure. It's hard to make those calls sometimes if you're not a veterinarian. And so, yeah, if you are at all concerned, it's worthwhile.
Dr. Dawn Crandall, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
This portion of Animal Radio was underwritten by Fear Free. The veterinarian isn't typically thought of as your pet's favorite place to go. With Fear Free, that all changes. To learn more and find a certified Fear Free veterinary professional near you, visit fearfreepets.com.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
Hi, this is Judith Chapman from Young and the Restless at CBS, and I'm on Animal Radio right now, and I'm asking everyone out there to please spay and neuter your pets.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It's Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets. Now imagine when you were a kid, that pet that you had when you were like 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
if that pet was still alive today and was still your pet. Could you imagine?
Oh, my gosh. That would be an old pet for me.
Certainly. And most cats and dogs, of course, they only live, mostly a couple decades.
Not long enough.
Yeah.
But our next guest, Gina Smith, do you mind if I say your age, Gina?
No, I don't mind.
Okay, Gina's 65 years old, and you've had your pet since you were 10 years old.
Wow.
Yes. Yep. That's correct.
What kind of pet is it?
This is a gopher tortoise. He's a desert tortoise, so they are commonly found in Arizona or Texas.
And how did the tortoise come into your life?
Well, I loved turtles and tortoises as a girl and really wanted one that I could keep. And my father was a friend of the zoo director in Milwaukee at the time and arranged for me to get this gopher tortoise, who I have named George. And that was my 10th birthday present.
You're the first person I've ever met that has had a pet so long. How long do tortoises live?
Well, in his natural habitat, he could live 40 to 60 years. But in captivity, he may push 80 or 100.
Wow.
Now, did you know at the time as a 10-year-old girl that this was going to be pretty much a lifelong pet? Did you even think about that?
Well, I don't believe that I thought about that. I was very serious about his care and really took him every place and felt very connected to him right from the beginning. And it never occurred to me that he wouldn't be around. I guess I should put it that way.
You said you took him every place. What kind of places did you take him?
Well, even as a girl, he used to ride in my bike basket, and he'd go to my best friend's house with me. And when my family went on summer vacations, we would go to Door County in Wisconsin. My uncle had a cabin there, and George would come along for that and walk along the beach on the shores of Lake Michigan. And of course, he went to college with me when I moved out of my parents' home.
And they allowed you to have your pet turtle there at college, huh?
I'm not sure that they were really aware that that was going on. But, of course, all my friends on the floor of my dormitory knew he was in there. But he was a very quiet pet, so I'm sure that didn't bother them.
You eventually got married. How did this affect your relationship with your husband?
Well, he does, on occasion, have to care for George. But he's more than willing to do that. And I think my husband is very attached to George, as I am.
Have you had any scares? Did George run away or anything ever?
Well, I can't really say he runs away. He has been lost on a number of occasions by getting out of his enclosure. And that is very frightening in Minnesota because he, of course, couldn't tolerate any cold temperatures. But I've been very fortunate in, you know, all the neighborhood kids coming out to look for him and always have gotten him back. So we are very careful with him.
Is he microchipped?
No. I don't know how you'd really want to do that to a nice tortoise.
Do you have any other animals?
I do. I have a Labrador named Reggie, and he is just 2. And George has had many other dogs, all Labradors. I had Labradors as a girl, and George, of course, outlived all of them, and my 2 that I had as an adult person. So now he's on, like, his 5th Labrador, I think.
Whoa.
Does he get along with the dogs?
You know, they do. You kind of have to watch, because certainly a puppy would be over-curious and might feel that the chew toy, so they're really not left to their own devices, I'll say.
I'm wondering how you have a desert tortoise that survives in Minnesota.
Well, George only summers outside and spends the rest of the winter months inside the house.
Is it legal to own him where you live?
Well, it is not illegal in the sense that he was born in captivity and gifted to me many, many years ago. You can't acquire these tortoises anymore because they are on the endangered species list.
If he's 56 years old, the chances are he could live to 100, especially being protected inside. I mean, he could live to the Bieber administration. I mean,
don't say that.
What if he outlives you?
Well, I have one daughter who fortunately lives just a mile from me. And she now has 4 children, and they all love George, and George will go and live with someone of her family.
Do turtles have a lot of personality?
You know, I really feel that they do. They are really charming to look at, of course. And after all this time, George certainly knows my voice and will walk towards me. You know, he he's a really neat guy. I really, really think he's a great pet.
Well, we thank you for coming on the air and telling us this wonderful story. Go give George, I don't know if you'd give him a hug, what you do, give him a pat on the shell, from all of us here at Animal Radio.
I will do that, and thank you for being interested in George.
That's a very interesting story. Yes. Thank you, Gina.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Take care now.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, this is Elaine Hendricks on Animal Radio. Please, adopt a pet.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
We all know that our animals have senses that are far beyond our very own. You know, they can see things that we can't see. They can hear things we can't hear.
Yeah.
And they can smell things we can't smell. And there may be other senses that we don't even know about, which I suspect there is. Today, we're going to be talking to a nosologist. I don't know what the name is for that. Is that olfactory?
I thought about that. Wouldn't it be rhino something?
I
would say olfactologist.
Olfactologist.
I would make that word up if it's not already there.
Well, we're just going to go with that, and we're going to create a word today, perhaps, here on Animal Radio. We're going to be talking to olfactologist Frank Rossell from Norway. He's a scientist over there that studies the schnozzes on everything from beavers to cats and dogs. And
why did you put beavers first?
Well, I know that's so odd to say beavers.
that's his primary focus.
Yeah, that's the reason I said it is because he actually started studying beaver noses.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so that's all on the level there. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes, and he'll tell us what our dogs can actually smell. Because, you know, when we take them for a walk, they stop, they sniff. What are they sniffing? They obviously are digesting a lot of data and information,
mm-hmm.
like I think species or when somebody was there last or maybe what they ate.
Male or female?
Yeah, we'll find out all of those coming up in just a few minutes. And he'll tell us also about the dogs that can smell cancer. Yeah, I know. That's really weird, huh? That's all on the way in just a few minutes right here on Animal Radio. Lori, what are you working on?
I got to tell you, this is real news, okay? I mean, as strange as it sounds, it's not fake stuff because it's been happening a lot lately. But what happens when your dog is not really a dog? Because they're having a huge problem with this in China where a family's dog has become a bear. Does that make sense?
Well, this just happened like a couple of weeks ago, didn't it? The same thing?
You know what? It's happening a lot, Hal. And what the experts say could be behind all of these stories of, oh, I didn't know my dog was a bear. Oh, my dog is really a white fox. Those kind of stories.
Okay, that's on the way with Lori Brooks in just a few minutes. Let's go to the phones for your calls. Hey, Janie.
Hi.
Hi, where are you? What's going on?
Well, I have a black Labrador, and every once in a while, he's afraid to walk across the hardwood floors.
Okay.
So, like, he'll get up on that couch and he'll put two paws down and then he'll cry and cry and cry. And I go to help him down and he fights when he finally gets down. Then he runs across the floor real fast and gets in his bed.
Okay. How old is he?
He's 7.
7 years old. Has he always done this or is this a newer behavior?
He does it like once or twice a year.
Hmm. Okay. So at other times of the year, he'll walk over the floor without any kind of problem?
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's really interesting. Mm. If it was something that was present all the time, then I would talk about, you know, a phobia about a different substrate. And we do see that in dogs where they will see a change in the texture or the contrast of flooring, like light to dark flooring. And then they have an anxiety and a fear about that. But that would not typically be something that goes away and then gets better without some other reason. So I guess the reasons that I would look at would be something that might be a physical issue with his mobility when he's going across that floor. Is he losing his footing? Is he slipping?
Yes.
Or has he had some kind of a fall and he doesn't trust walking on that floor? Is that the case?
Well, he does. When he goes across the floor real fast to get to his bed, he'll slip and slide.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, it is possible that he's having, whether or not he has any kind of like orthopedic problem that's causing him pain or, you know, some change in his gait and his inability, you know, like an inability to normally walk on that kind of surface. So that's one thing. So that might be, you know, a good reason just to have him checked by your vet and make sure there's nothing going on neurologically or orthopedically in his legs. But if it is more that he's just had, say, a bad scare, he slipped and he fell while he was running around being a goofball, then I'd say the first thing I would do would be to look at ways to improve his grip on the floor. And the simple things are to put area rugs, you know, throw rugs that have a good backing that won't slip and slide, to give him some surface on that. The other thing would be to also just, you know, really work with him with kind of almost like a training session, and to just reassure him, keep him on a, you know, short leash, sit at the couch, take a step off the couch and sit on the floor with him and give him a treat, and then take another step forward, encourage him forward, and, you know, give him another treat, and really work on building that positive association that it's okay to walk across that flooring.
There's one other thing. I get hit with those kind of collars that you put on, flea collars, that are supposed to last 8 months. And it seems like whenever I put one of those new ones on, it seems like this happens.
So you're cutting out just a little bit. I just want to get this. So when you put on a flea collar, this is when he has trouble going across the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, there are certain pets that we do see this type of problem. Some pets can actually have a type of nerve pain or an irritation in the skin itself associated with some of the different products. See it a little bit more in kitties, but it certainly is possible. And that's a very interesting association that you found, that if it's only at that time, then it certainly can be related to that. For some pets, it is a temporary thing and it can go away, but it would be maybe a cause for me to want to look at an alternative product for him for a flea tick medication. Do you know what kind of collar it is?
You know, I can't. I'm not at home, but I can't remember the name of it. It's like Sinago.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it could be a Seresto collar. That's a common one that we use for long durations. But
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, well, I would certainly say it would be a good reason to look at an alternative, maybe instead of a flea collar approach to your flea and tick needs, is maybe to try one of the longer acting oral products, NexGard and Bravecto are two different products that you give a pill and it lasts for several months. So that might be a good alternative to try for your next time and see if you encounter a similar problem or not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of wondered about the oral. You know, kind of avoided them because I didn't know if that was like giving them poison, you know, but the oral things are okay.
Well, it really depends. You know, there are pets that will have a dermal reaction to a topical product, but they may not be the same pets that would have a reaction with an oral product because, you know, they're in different forms. A lot of times with topical products, there's other things in those products that can cause an irritation to the skin. So, you know, it's not to say that he's going to have a problem with another type of product in a pill form, but it would just be different.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much, because, you know, I worry about him when he gets like that. He'll wake me up in the middle of the night crying because he won't get off the couch. Hmm. And I have to go in there and eventually force him off. And then he runs to either my bedroom or runs to his bed. And, you know, it's kind of difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. That's an interesting call. I'm going to put this up on the list of more peculiar problems that people have called in with.
There's not a lot of things that make you scratch your head, but you're scratching your head there. Thank you, JD, for your call and making Dr. Debbie scratch her head.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Yeah, hold on one sec. I'm just going to pull over so you don't hear the buzzing in the thing.
You been driving?
Yeah. We're in Vermont. And I could lose you at any moment. But what is it you want me to say?
Wendy Malik, Animal Radio, spay and neuter. So, hi, this is Wendy Malik.
Okay.
Listening to Animal
Okay,
Radio.
I got it. Okay. Hi, this is Wendy Malik on the Animal Network. And don't forget to spay and neuter.
Animal Radio.
Oh, sorry. Hi, this is Wendy Malik on Animal Radio. And do not forget, spay and neuter.
Hi, it's Alan Cable. Here's something interesting. What do you think that is? Believe it or not, that's actually a French bulldog begging to get up on the couch.
Crazy.
Didn't know they could make that sound, did you? Dogs surprise us every day. Everybody's talking about the video of the dogs driving. And we actually talked to that gentleman on the show. He's an amazing trainer. So today we're going to talk about his training technique. It's called clicker training. So what is it? Well, whenever your dog does something you want him to do, you use a clicker. It makes a short click sound, and it tells your dog exactly when they're doing something right. When you combine it with positive reinforcement like a treat or a good boy, it's a very powerful way to teach your dog to do a behavior. Researchers have long known that dogs create associations. So the more you pair up a desired action with a positive consequence, the stronger the association becomes. For instance, my dog has a rug in the kitchen, and that's where he gets lots of treats. I give him a lot of affection there, too. So whenever he sees me, he gets up and walks over and lays down on his rug. He makes an association with the rug that when he's there, most of the time he gets a treat, affection, or both. Brings us back to our bulldog, who probably gets let up on the couch when he makes that sound. So now that we know about actions and consequences and how they create an association in your dog's mind, let's talk about what a clicker is effective in doing. The hardest, most difficult thing for you to do is to let your dog know what you want. The clicker speeds that up. You have to click at the exact moment the behavior you want happens. If your dog sits, you click. If your dog lays down, you click. If he gives you his paw, you click. It's like taking a picture of the exact behavior you want to reinforce. You actually click before you start giving the dog a command or a hand signal. The first couple of times, you just wait for your dog to sit, then you give him a quick click and a treat. When your dog gets clicked several times for sitting and starts to repeat the behavior knowing exactly what earns the click, you can start using a hand signal or the word sit. A clicker will help you be very clear in the behavior you want from your dog. Be patient and remember, good boy.
This is
Animal Radio, baby.
Hey, this is Paula Poundstone. Wait, I forget where I am.
Animal Radio.
Animal Radio. I love that. Right. Hey, this is Paula Poundstone on Animal Radio. Spay and neuter your pets or we're going to be eaten alive!
Award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler is known for her novels about dogs and how they bring out the best in humans. Her newest, A Reason for Hope, is an uplifting story of resilience, redemption, and a special yellow lab named Hope, a courthouse dog who's trained to comfort victims and witnesses. When a woman's life is upended by trauma, Hope gives her the courage to seek justice. A Reason for Hope by Kristen von Kreisler is available everywhere books are sold. For more info, visit KensingtonBooks.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Oh, I'm so excited. Snout Guy, or the olfactologist. Is that what you called it?
That's the new word I made up. I don't know if it's real or not.
The guy that studies noses of our animals will be on in just a few minutes right here on Animal Radio. Need I say more? You got to stick around for that. It should be a lot of fun. Let's go ahead and take one for Dr. Debbie right now. We have Pinky on the... Hey, Pinky, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I love that name. How'd you get that name?
Actually, the day I was born, my grandmother gave it to me because I was so pink. And I'm 61, and I still have the name.
Oh, I love it. I have Dr. Debbie right here for you. What's going on with your animal?
Well, I have a 14-year-old border collie, and she has bad genes. She's a puppy mill dog. And so I've had problems all of her life. But I got her when she was about a year old. Right now, the problem is I'm just want to find out what's the best amount of exercise would be for her. She does have hip dysplasia, and she does have advanced arthritis. She does get a lot of care. She goes monthly and gets acupuncture, and she gets chiropractic care, and she's on Chinese herbs and also other like glucosamine products, and has been since she was about four. What I'm wondering about is if how much exercise she should get.
Okay, basically. Great question.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you sound like you're tapping into a lot of different modalities to help control pain and how to keep her mobile in her senior years there. So that's wonderful. And the hard thing is that this is a difficult question to answer for every pet as a blanket statement. And my response normally is the amount of exercise we want for a senior pet with arthritis depends on their existing muscle tone and strength, and also what they can tolerate already. So, for instance, my 13-and-a-half-year-old dog, we usually get out for walks almost every day, and that's something that has helped to maintain some muscle mass. If we have a pet that has lost a lot of muscle tone because they can't move their legs as well and they're arthritic and painful, they're not going to have the stamina to withstand to more lengthy exercise. So for some senior pets of that age, you know, I might just say, hey, just take them to the corner and of the block and bring them home. And the ways that we determine how much is enough and not too much is really on how well the pet is tolerating it during the activity. So for walking, it's a weight-bearing activity. So, you know, weight management is always somewhere in that therapy for dealing with arthritis and how to manage that. So we want to just make sure that when we're coming back and returning from our exercise that we're not lagging, we're not dragging feet, and we're not breathing excessively hard. If we're seeing any of that, then we need to cut things back in the activity. And in my guideline of 30 minutes is, you know, for some old dogs, that is more than enough, and some others, 10 minutes might be more than enough. Now, swimming, warmer months of the year, swimming is fabulous. And an older pet, as long as we do this with supervision, they can help to maintain good muscle tone by doing regular swimming activity. And I'm much more apt to get a pet in a water treadmill during the cold months if you have that opportunity at a pet rehabilitation facility, or some pools actually have that for pets in their daycare facilities and such. So that might be something else that you can do to help maintain that muscle tone without putting a lot of stress on those joints that are, you know, already achy and having some problems.
Well, it's funny you say that, because after she did have ACL surgery about 5-6 years ago, afterwards I would put a harness on her. We have a big pool, so that's not uh-huh. in-ground pool. I would put a harness on her and a leash, and I would walk around the pool as she'd swim. You know, and I did that for therapy. So she's she likes to get into the water. She'll get in and lay on the step. So, you know, it feels good to her when we have a lot of, you know, hot summer days, which we do here.
Yeah, definitely. And it is so important. And I hate to say that, you know, you shouldn't walk your senior pet if they have arthritis or hip problems, because it really can make a difference to keeping some of those pets mobile into their very senior years. So you just have to use some good sense with that.
Right, yeah, because I have arthritis too, so I know, but I go to the gym regularly, so even though it's not a lot, and there's certain things that are better than others, like swimming is very good, but I just try and do every possible thing I can so that she's, you know, not in pain, and she has been raw fed all her life, except for the last couple of years. She hasn't been able to, her stomach is more sensitive, so I cook for her. So she's been on an excellent diet, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why she's so old, considering all the problems we've had.
Yeah, well, Pinky, you sound like you're definitely attentive mom number one, so I applaud you on that. So thank you for your call. We appreciate you calling in to Animal Radio.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Animal Radio. call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Dogs or cats, horse or emu, animals are people too.
After a long day of chasing that frisbee, there's nothing better than wrapping your paws around a cold bottle of dog beer. That's what Terry Berendon, a pet shop owner in Holland, thought, so she created a beer for her wine maraners. Berendon consigned a local brewery to bottle her non-alcoholic dog beer and named it Quitzbel Beer. Quitzbel Beer is a Dutch word for wagging a tail. The beer is made from beef extract and malt, and although it's fit for human consumption, she's marketing the beer for dogs who need a break from taking naps and wagging their tails and eating and playing with dog toys. And I'm Britt Savage for Animal Radio.
Animals are people too. Animal Radio.
This is
Animal Radio, baby.
Admit it. You love your dog, and he is part of the family. So when choosing your next vacation, don't forget Fido. With just a little planning, the entire family can enjoy a road trip. To find the best vacation spot for Spot, subscribe to Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog, where each issue includes hotel and destination reviews, where both you and Fido are welcome. Go online to FidoFriendly.com and find out what all the barking's about.
Hi, this is Prince Lorenzo Borghese on Animal Radio. Please remember to stay near to your animals.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
And I'm Lori Brooks. There is more canine confusion in China. Just a few days after news had broke that there was a woman in China who found out that her puppy that she bought from a pet store last year was actually a fox, we now have information about another woman who has sadly come to a similar conclusion about what she thought was her pet dog. In this case, the woman bought a puppy believing it was a Tibetan Mastiff dog. So you've never seen a Tibetan Mastiff? They're Let me big, aren't a little, they? They're very big. But I can also tell you that they look very similar to a bear cub. Really? Kind of like chows would look like a bear. Yes, yes. So one day, the woman says that her family was just amazed by her pet's massive appetite because it would chow down on a box of fruit plus two buckets of noodles every day. Now, I don't know. That's certainly not a grain-free diet. No. But I don't know what kind of diet that is. But it wasn't until this pet reached 250 pounds and began walking around on its hind legs that they finally realized that something here was very, very wrong. Turns out the dog was actually an Asiatic black bear. And that black bear has since been given to a wildlife rescue center because Asiatic black bears are listed as a very vulnerable species. They're in high demand in places like Vietnam because there they are illegally traded and milked for their liver bile. And bile, which is a yellow liquid, is then falsely marketed as a treatment for everything from cancers to hangovers. But that's not, you know, that's a myth that it cures anything there. But now, think about this. Are all of these mistaken animal identities really mistakes? You got to love National Geographic because they went to the founder and president of Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation in San Antonio, Texas. And he says that young wild animals have a really different look and smell to them compared to our usual domesticated pets, that wild animals are going to be noticeably more scared and anxious in unfamiliar environments with humans than their domesticated dog and cat counterparts. He also says that his first reaction to all of this, oh my gosh, I didn't know my dog was really a bear. He says it's more than it being an honest mistake. In other words, he says, if a person is tied up in a controversial, possibly criminal situation with animals, saying they mistook a wild animal for a domesticated one might be their way out of legal charges and prosecution. It's got to be.
Sure, because really, can you not tell the difference?
Well, didn't we report on the story about firemen rescuing what they thought were puppies down a drain, and they were actually fox?
We're talking about a bear here.
Yeah, but still, when they're with their babies, I mean, Ladybug, luckily she was a dog, but she wasn't the dog I thought she was as a puppy when she grew up. As when they're little, it's kind of hard to tell.
Oh, my God. Really?
But you think that they would have a clue before it reaches 250 pounds and it's been walking around on its hind legs for a year. Yeah. Although there are dogs that can do that, right?
Listen up. If your dog walks on its hind legs and eats lots of fruit, maybe it's a bear. Just saying.
There are dogs that can walk around on their hind legs. I've seen it. It's called pedal something. P-E-D-A-L. I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
Hi, this is Carrie Annie Nava from Dance with the Stars. Don't forget to spay and neuter your animals, and you're listening to Animal Radio.
Who let the dogs out?
Alan Cable, hi.
After a minute, we'll take his cone off.
I don't know. I might start biting my tail. Here comes your dog watch. They've got all kinds of dogs down there at the shelter.
Fixed, hips removed.
But then it happened, something Barbara'd never seen before.
Saw his picture, so I said, sure, we'll take him.
Adam!
Adam the dog has got a strange problem.
Took him in for a blood test.
Guess what? Adam the dog has allergies. But guess what he's allergic to?
Humans.
Now there's a new one, a dog that's allergic to people.
Seriously?
I know, Barbara was speechless too.
I didn't believe her at first, I thought she was kidding. She said, no, just like we can be allergic to dogs, he is allergic to human dander.
Guess what? Adam's going to get allergy shots just like people do.
The vet seems to think we can fix him, and he starts on allergy shots this week.
This is
Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is Animal Radio. This is where we celebrate the connection with our pets. They're very unique in that they give you all that unconditional love. They can see things we can't. They can hear things we can't. They can smell things we can't. That's why they make great protectors.
Yes.
And the next gentleman that we have on joining us is Dr. Frank Russell. He's a professor at the Department of Environmental and Health Sciences at the University College of Southeast Norway. He studies noses, not just dog noses, but noses of all kinds of animals. Hi, Frank. How are you doing?
Hello. Hi. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Very
Thanks
good.
For the invitation.
What time is it there?
It's 9:30 here in Norway, so it's starting to be pretty late.
Thank you for staying up late to be on the show with us today. So you study noses. Is there an official name for a person who studies that, the olfactory senses?
No, that's a good question. I don't really know.
But you were interested in noses from just a young kid and the smells that animals can smell, right?
Yes. I got my first dog, Tinka, she was called, when I was 12 years old, and she actually followed me on all these beaver trips because I actually ran a long-term project about beavers here in Norway. And that's when I started to observe her. She used her nose everywhere. And when we were out on beaver trips, she even smelled the beaver scent marks.
Wow. So you were studying the olfactory senses of beavers?
Yes. That's what I've been focusing mostly on for the last almost 30 years now.
I don't think of beavers as having a good schnoz. But they can smell a lot of things?
Oh, yeah. They are probably as good as dogs.
Good as dogs. What can dogs smell? I guess my question is, and I'm going to be pretty frank here, I take my dog out for a walk. She has to stop every 10, 15 feet to smell a fire hydrant or a bush or something. I assume she's smelling where other dogs have marked. And I liken it to Facebook. You know, this is her Facebook. She goes, she reads the posts, and she might even comment by peeing on it. What is it that they're smelling?
Well, if you're talking about peeing, they can smell a lot of different things. First of all, they understand it's another dog that are pee there, so it's the species. And maybe we don't know much about this, but who knows, maybe some breed differences as well. Wow. But definitely, if it's a male, he will understand it's a female that have a scent mark there, if she's in heat or not, and who is she? So have I met this lady before or not?
Yes.
So, and also maybe the age of the scent mark. So did she pass long time before me or just recently?
Is it true that they use one nostril for, like they use their right nostril for things that are unfamiliar and they use their left nostril for familiar scents?
Yeah, that's actually one study showing that. So if it's some not dangerous scent like food, lemon, secretion from a female, for instance, a dog, they actually first use their right nostril because they're not sure what this is, and then they switch to left because they are more certain then that this is nothing dangerous. So they are using the left side of the brain.
Wow.
So the left side of the brain is connected to the left nostril. Mm. And if you, for instance, give your dog some sweat odor from a veterinarian, then they use only the right nose or nostril, sorry. So that means that they are, the right side of the brain is connected to negative emotions.
Okay.
Wow.
But it's one interesting thing you should be aware of next time you're out. And you all know about the tail wagging of a dog.
Yes.
Right. But if the tail is going to the right side of the dog, his right side,
uh-huh,
then it's actually happy. So it's opposite compared with the
their nose,
man's, to the nostrils. So here it's a change. It's going from the right side of the body to the left side of the brain. So the nerve crosses here.
Oh.
But don't do that with, yeah, so it's opposite. So you need to kind of be aware of this. And if you see another dog, you are out in a dog park, for instance, and suddenly the tail is going to the left, the dog's left, then you should be worried. then it's negative emotions.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. I have so many questions, especially about service animals. We're with Frank Russell. He's a professor at the Department of Environmental and Health Services at the University College of Southeast Norway. And up next, I want to find out about service animals, so stick around.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hey, this is Brian DiTillo. I play Lucas Roberts on Days of Our Lives, and you're listening to Animal Radio. And please don't forget to have your pet spayed or neutered. That's my favorite saying from Bob Barker, by the way.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discreet sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
Hey, y'all, it's Lisa Matassa, and you're listening to Animal Radio.
Check out Animal Radio highlights, all the good stuff without the blah, blah, blah. Browse on over to animalradio.pet.
Joining us is Frank Russell. He's a professor in the Department of Environmental and Health Services at the University College of Southeast Norway. Whew, that's a mouthful. And he's the author of Secrets of the Snout, The Dog's Incredible Nose. Judy, I know you had a question.
I'm worried whenever I meet a dog, it goes right for my crotch. Why is that?
Yeah, I hate that.
Yes.
That's crazy. And I consider myself a clean guy. I mean, I shower a lot, but that drives me crazy when that happens.
Yeah, you don't shower enough, I think, because it's more or less impossible. If you think about it, you have 5 million different glands, scent glands, on your body. And it's something called apocrine glands, sweat glands, that are exactly on your private spot. And this scent, or a scent from these glands, says something about who you are. So they first try to identify you. Do I know you? Do I not know you? Who are you? And then later they actually sniff other places to figure out what kind of emotional or mental state you are in.
Okay, it has nothing to do with cleanliness.
No.
How far away can dogs smell?
Yeah, we don't really know exactly, but it's some, at least some rumors I've seen out there saying that a dog can sniff, for instance, a male dog can sniff a female in heat 4 kilometers away.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty long distance. And actually, my dog, one morning, he just disappeared. And I phoned him, I guess, 2 kilometers away from our house. And then she was on the porch at a female in heat. As happy as ever, wagging his tail to the right.
I know there are service animals that can detect people that are going to have a seizure or people that have diabetes.
Or cancer.
Or cancer. How are the dogs able to identify these things? I mean, how is a dog able to say, okay, this guy's going to have a seizure in a few minutes?
Well, it's not that easy with a seizure. I think it's started to come some research about it now, but it's probably the cells are changing, and when you breathe out, the dog can sniff the change. For cancer, you know, the first dogs, they actually sniffed on a leg of a woman in England, in London, and they could figure out that she had cancer because of just the mole was releasing some chemicals that was not there before.
I find that so intriguing. I think there's even dogs that sniff out pirated CDs and DVDs at custom borders.
Yes, yes, they can do that. So it was actually, they found a lot of CDs that was illegally produced. I can't remember exactly the country, but it was in Asia somewhere. And they can sniff out more or less everything you can imagine. Just if they have some scent, they can sniff it out. I was really surprised when I wrote the book that they had so many different jobs that we have put them to. You know, they can sniff everything from, as you say, diseases, or if you are at the customs, or if you all know about police dogs. And for my own research, I actually used them for sniffing of beaver scents.
Beaver scent.
Yeah, and in Finland. Because in Finland, they have introduced both beaver species. We have two different beaver species, the North American one and the Eurasian one. And when I did some chemical analysis, I have a background as a chemical engineer, and we used something called a GCMS, a gas chromatograph with mass spectrometer, and we couldn't find a difference in the pee from the beavers between these two species. So I asked the dogs, and they actually sniffed it out. They told me which one is the North American, which one is the Eurasian beaver. And in Finland, the whole purpose of the study is that they don't want the North American beaver in Finland. So then just giving me a scent mark, I can ask my dogs to tell me which species it is.
I got to ask, though, do you have like a refrigerator or freezer full of like different animals, yes, excrements, pee and fecal material? I mean, is this something that I could get a sense for from you?
Yeah, it's a little bit embarrassing, but I guess I have 1,500 poos from the beavers.
Oh, my gosh.
A lot of other, other species as well. So, yeah.
You got to be careful when you take the lean cuisine out of the freezer that you're getting the right thing.
Exactly. I'm not sure all my colleagues are that happy.
So this may be out of your scope, but why do dogs roll in different scents?
Probably to take away their own scent. So from when they were wolves, you know, in the old days, so they don't get eaten by other predators. That's what people think. That's the main thing. But we really don't know.
The book looks fascinating. It's called Secrets of the Snout. So I'm going to give out 10 copies of the books right now. If you're not lucky enough to get on through, you can head on over to our website at animalradio.pet and hit the As Heard on Animal Radio button to learn more. Frank, thank you so much for staying up late tonight and joining us.
Thank you for being a part of the show.
Once again, it has just flown by. If you have any questions about the books or anything you've heard on today's show, head on over to animalradio.pet and hit the As Heard on Animal Radio button. And you know what else you'll find over there? The books Dr. Debbie writes. Yorkshire Terriers, Shih Tzus, Pugs, Mini Schnauzers, How to Be Your Dog's Best Friend. Find links over at animalradio.pet and hit the As Heard on Animal Radio. And of course, if you need your fix during the week, download the Animal Radio app for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. Have yourself a great week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I just wanted to remind everybody that if you want to make your voice heard on emotional support animals flying on airplanes, that the Department of Transportation is now soliciting your opinions. And we do have that website that you will need. The link on our website. Just go to animalradio.com.
This is Animal Radio Network.